And it was just, like, crazy hot?
Oh, no, no, I just, because ADR, we had to get it totally no, like, external sound. Like, so we turned off the fridge, turned off the air, shut windows to get as, like, best, cleanest sound as possible.
And your roommates, like, really upset.
Well, because when I turned off the fridge, it didn't turn back on. So everything, like, melted and some things went bad and...
Everything was destroyed. Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. From Los Angeles, California, I'm Cassidy Robinson. I usually say from Portland, Oregon. This is my co-host Richard Wally, but Richard Wally is not here. As we announced last week's podcast, he is already traveled to our home state of Idaho, where he's staying for a week before we have to go to a wedding over there. So there's not going to be an episode next week. But I brought on my good friend and colleague from grad school, Andy Motz.
Hello, everyone.
You've never been on the podcast before.
I haven't, no.
Have you ever been on a podcast before?
I have, yeah. So I've done a podcast a couple of times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who?
For an old website I used to blog for, and they did a couple of podcasts. And we would
I had never known this about
really?
You.
Yeah. It was like super like nerdy film podcast. So we get around and talk about really obscure art that probably... hardly anyone has heard of for like an hour or so. It was like,
then you'll be at home.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You'll
good.
Be at home. Okay. Yeah. And you know, we're not only talking about obscure films, although not this week, but we also are obscure in general.
Okay. Cool.
Nobody knows about us.
Okay.
We're that cool.
Wow. That's really great. You're so alternative. Yeah. I love how alternative.
It's so alternative
is.
That it's an alternative from listening to a podcast.
I've found the right place then.
You have.
Okay, cool.
Today we're going to be talking about Trainwreck, and at the end of the show we're going to do some separate Netflix recommendations because we weren't able to really kind of figure out a way to do the Netflix homework.
We're going really alternative this
yeah.
week.
We will still do Pussy Riot for the Netflix homework whenever I'm able to do this again with Richard, which is not going to be next week. It might be the week after, hopefully. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to make sure that I was able to do a podcast this week, because I knew I was going to have to take next week off. And surprisingly, when I called out to all my friends, it was like, hey, who's seen Trainwreck? Who can do a podcast today? Like, totally last minute. I was like only half committed to the idea of doing one. Like, I might as well ask. And then I would say the person least likely responded.
Yeah. The person who doesn't show up to anything and is always like, I'm busy with something else.
Sure.
Yes.
The elusive Andy Motz.
Yeah.
Like the Yeti. Was,
yeah. I only show up every once in a while. I disappear for a little bit, come back. Mm. Yeah.
Always blurry in photos.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure Andy was there, but he's not in the photo.
So we talked about a little bit over what you've been doing through the summer. We both graduated with the same degree. In a master's in film studies.
Mm-hmm.
And I like had practically no transition from my internship at the Wrap to becoming an employee. So the summer has just been like zooming by. It feels
I
like
bet.
Still feels like like the beginning of June to me, even though the summer's almost over.
Yeah.
But what have you been doing?
So for me, I've just been actually working, prepping to get a new short film going.
Oh.
So I've been busy. I've nailed down a producer. I've been revising edits of the script.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also been doing a lot of photography as getting more into photography. Got a camera with my graduation money.
Nice, nice.
So I'm working on some video art pieces as well.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you write the script for the short?
I did, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Awesome. How long of a shoot would it be?
So it's 9 pages.
All right.
So hopefully it'd only be like a weekend shoot. because shooting out of film school is really difficult or a lot more complicated. Because
oh, you're using the Chapman's?
No, we're not using any of it. Oh, so okay. That's why it's more difficult. Like, you can't use the schools, and you have to get your own insurance, rent your own equipment.
Right.
Permits, crew is all on you. When you're in film school, it's like all available to you. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so nice to be able to use the school's insurance or have, you know, everyone in your class, like, just ask in class, hey, you want to grip on my film this weekend?
Yeah.
I'll grip on yours next weekend. But that doesn't exist, especially if you're not paying them anymore. I'm in the process of getting some money and such, so.
That's awesome, though. Like, yeah. That's cool. But I mean, I know that you've done, like, volunteer work and stuff like that that's not film related. Right. And I didn't know that you were still actually working on something creative. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's definitely been influenced by my volunteer work. So a lot of the volunteer work I've done has been with low-income people with HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm actually, the movie is about people living with HIV in contemporary society. Because we don't ever see that in movies, really, I don't think. We see a lot of about the AIDS epidemic in the 80s.
Yeah.
But
in almost this, like, period sense.
Yes.
Like, this is this thing we've overcome.
Right.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, we've overcome a lot, and medicine is really great now, but there's still a lot of struggles that mm-hmm. people face who are living with HIV, and we don't ever see that. And
probably even more so in, like, poorer neighborhoods and
exactly.
Yeah, economic disparities. And
yeah, so in urban kind of poorer areas, there are there's a lot of struggles that people still face and stigmas, and because, you know, even if, you know, so for example, HIV isn't a death sentence anymore. You know, you can take medication and live a long life, but a lot of people still don't know that.
Right.
So, you know, the idea of, like, getting HIV is still, like, so it can feel such a weight when it's really not, or people struggle to pay for their medication and pay for rent.
Yeah.
And already...
I mean, it's super expensive, I've heard.
It is really expensive,
like,
yeah.
It's almost, like, even with insurance, it's still, like, super, super expensive.
It's very pricey, and people react all kinds of different ways. As lots mm-hmm. of different side effects, people react differently too. So yeah, I think there's just, for me, and just after working alongside people with HIV, and I just was, like, really inspired by their stories of, like, all they'd gone through, and just, like, people need to know these things.
Totally.
And or just people just need to, these are voices that haven't really been heard, and so the story is about this guy who delivers, actually no, someone who, like, he delivers HIV medication mm-hmm. to people, lower income people, and so the movie follows him throughout a day as he delivers to different houses, and then there's, like, mini flashbacks to different moments in his life where he, like, found transcendence, and so on a deeper level, I'm talking about, like, where we find peace in a really chaotic world.
That's incredible. I didn't know, like, this is all new to me, so...
There's my pitch. That was my pitch.
That's your elevator pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool. I hope that that works out for you. You know, I mean, it sounds like you've gotten, you know, from the point of having the idea to getting, you know, in the early stages of production really, really quickly. So it's really coalesced, like, almost since the last time I've seen you, which has only been, like, maybe a month.
Yeah. I still want to be one of those film students who... when I'm 27 or I'm still talking about the film I made in film school.
Right.
You know, or, like, still, like, never being, like, just get, because a lot of people, it's so easy to get stuck and not,
and just trying to make money and survive, like, yeah.
And I totally get that, and I'm just trying to make sure or hope that I'm not that same way.
Well, good.
So.
I hope that that works out. And I should mention to the podcast listeners, Andy is the most bleeding heart of the bleeding heart liberals that I know in my life. We decided a long time ago, us, our grad group, that you're the best of us. Like, you have the purest heart. And so that if we were all, like, captured by terrorists or aliens, and they were only going to let one of us go, we as a group would let you go, because you're probably the best person.
I like the bleeding heart, and I've gotten the white guilt a lot. Like, you have really bad white guilt.
If you want to look at it in a bad way, sure. Bad way.
But thank you. I have a bleeding heart. I'm very sentimental. So
yeah.
It's both a pro and a con. Because our world is kind of a crappy place sometimes, so...
And you're going to document that for us.
Yes. But also, how do we find beauty in it? I think that's also an interesting question.
Sure.
Too, so.
And I have seen your one short film. You debuted that at a festival... last year, mm-hmm. I want to say. or almost a year and a half ago, probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned this to you before, after I saw it. I think in the lobby after I saw that, I was like, thank God it was good. Because there's nothing more awkward than when you have a friend who's an artist or a filmmaker or a writer or something like that, and they want you to critique their work, and it's just so embarrassingly bad that there's no way you can be honest about it.
Yes. And I mean, having gone to film school, there have been those movies where I go to, like, a premiere for, like, a short film, and I, like, leave right afterwards because I don't want to have to, like,
have that weird interaction.
Weird interaction, because I don't want to lie and be like, oh my gosh, great job. But really, I'm like, that was so bad, you know? Like, I want to be honest, so I'll just, like, leave really early.
Yeah.
Like, wow, and he has really worked hard on that movie.
And I, you know, I was genuinely nervous about it when your movie showed up in the, or your first short from your other film school popped up. I was like, oh God, what's this gonna be? And then it ended up being like this legitimate good movie that like looks like a movie and like, you know, it's like tonally balanced and was well written. And yeah, so as a fan, I'm excited about your second film.
And hopefully, I mean, it's the same cinematographer, so who's also working with me on this awesome. Next one. So I owe a lot of how the other film looks because of him. So
great. Great. Exciting. Well, let's get into the show.
Yes. Enough and, about film school life and...
Well, I haven't been able to catch up with you really either, yeah. So that's a little bit what's happening now.
Of course.
So speaking of really important movies about things we really care about and our society...
Yes. How to find beauty in a difficult world.
Right. There's finally...
an answer here.
Finally, Andy, the Emojis motion picture.
Brilliance.
And
I'm not sure what that looks like or what that's gonna be. Like, how do you make is it like an animated movie?
Sony Pictures is making the movie apparently. And it looks like Eric Segal will also direct the film. Yeah, so I get the way that the Crave article that I'm bringing it, they're framing it as this is sort of because of the Lego movie,
okay.
Which sort of has franchised or allowed the ability for, you know, basically anything. I've said this for a long time. Everything is an IP.
Okay.
Right. You know, nothing is a quote unquote bad idea for a movie property anymore. It can be,
you know,
Coke Zero, the motion picture.
Right.
Like, that is not beyond belief anymore.
Yeah.
If it's a recognizable brand, the film industry will try and find a way to edge it into a movie.
But in other times, it's made a lot more sense. So, like, even the Lego movie, like, because they're actually, like, people, you know?
They're characters.
They're characters, yeah, right? Or, like, rides, like Pirates of the Caribbean, that makes a lot of sense to make. Or even, you know, the terrible Haunted Mansion, that kind of makes sense. I mean, emojis. Like, it sounds almost Inside Out-ish. Like, we'll be there
right.
Happy... emoji,
that's sort of what I was thinking. It's like, was it the success of that? Is this going to be
like DreamWorks?
Or... yeah, this is going
to
be the Shark Tale
to the Finding Nemo.
Yeah. Yes. Although they're way behind the game, if that's the case, because
yeah.
I mean, they're only talking about starting production now. So, by the time this is out. You know, Pixar is going to be on to something else completely, so.
Right.
But are we, : left side, parentheses about this?
I guess? Yes, most definitely. That's a great yes. I'm not sad about it. I'm definitely not happy about it.
Well, you probably won't have to see it.
No, I probably won't.
And we'll see. If I have to or not.
Maybe Dollar Theater?
Maybe. If you end up having kids very in the near future.
Yes.
Like in the next year.
No, my kids aren't going to watch that kind of stuff. If I ever have kids, they're only going to watch the good cartoons, okay?
Right. Quality. They're going to watch, like,
Ingmar
the Red
Bergman
Balloon. And then by the time they're five, they'll be old enough for Von Trier, so you can just
exactly.
Start them off on Breaking the Waves.
I really want them to have their existential crisis early on. That's why at age 11, they're already used to, like, how life is.
All right. Oh, this one I said I was going to explain to you a little bit.
Oh, yeah, please
Ridley
do.
Scott is going to tackle the Don Winslow novel that's based on the famous Mexican drug lord El Chapo. Did you hear about the news story that came out a couple weeks ago or maybe not even 2 weeks ago, that there was this big, huge, scary drug lord named El Chapo, couldn't make it up if he tried, who dug That's himself terrifying. Out of prison, like basically Shawshank style, like this really elaborate mile-long tunnel.
Yeah.
You did hear about that.
I did hear about that, yeah.
Okay. I was going to say, you listen to NPR.
Yeah, so I hear about the drug lord who's this, like this huge named El Chapo, which is...
Yeah.
It's unreal. I think it's from a movie.
So kind of serendipitously, Don Winslow had already been writing this fiction novel sort of based on this guy. He's, as a novelist, he's like really obsessed with the Mexican cartel
okay.
drug... gang culture, and he's been doing the series of books I believe that movie Savages that Oliver Stone made.
Yeah,
that was based on one of his books, or okay. he was involved somewhere in there. So this book like just came out like something like 2 weeks before El Chapo escapes. So what a better way to get your book option super fast?
Oh, yeah. By a big name director.
Yeah.
Book sales, movie. I mean,
it's all perfect. I wouldn't be that surprised. They say the El Chapo thing was so elaborate there had to have been an inside job.
Oh, I'm
or
sure.
something going
on. Because even like the other prison escape that happened over in America, like near New York. Remember that happened a couple like the beginning of the summer? Two inmates escaped because they had a relationship with like one of the women who did the laundry for the prison. And she, like, helped them get out, and it's just very elaborate.
Like,
and
that almost sounds like the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, the little pastries, you know, I don't think it was pastries, but still.
Or jumping into the laundry basket and then going yeah. and going down, like, the long track and everything.
Oh, yeah, no. So this way makes sense. I mean, Ridley Scott, he'll probably do Hollywood glamorized version.
Yeah.
It'll look good, not be that great.
But. Well, this is an older article, but I think like the next day or even on the same day, it was announced that they want to get Leonardo DiCaprio to play the DEA agent who was going one-on-one with their El Chapo facsimile character.
Hmm. Interesting. So it's going to be like, this reminds me, like The Departed, but taking
yeah.
place in Mexico.
And more like probably beheadings and craziness.
Lots more, yeah, more beheadings, less gunshots to the head, and more choppings of the heads.
Yeah, okay. More ultra violence.
Yeah,
there.
lovely.
I mean, Ridley Scott has been struggling for a while. I think he hasn't
since
had
Alien.
Like a
Blade Runner.
I'd like some of his movies off and on, but. Yeah, it seems like the last, like, four or so have not been very good. And he's almost getting to that point that we almost shouldn't expect great work from him. Even though I'm actually, I forgot that I'm a Prometheus apologist.
I'm silent.
You're looking at me in shame. I like that movie more than other people did. Mostly because Michael Fassbender, like, knocked it out of the park.
But, yeah, he's great in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Totally and, wasted on...
You know. Lovecraftian creatures everywhere, like, that usually gets my goat.
Yeah, I can say those two things are cool about the movie, but that's about it. Because, like, Ridley Scott, his movies, they never, like, they always look...
They look amazing.
They look amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
their
great.
Production design is, you know, incredible.
Spot on.
Yeah.
But it's the stories themselves and the way they're structured is kind of... are always mediocre. They're not, like, terrible. They always feel very mediocre to me.
Yeah.
Like, everything from even... I'm not a big fan of Gladiator... But like mm-hmm. Gladiator, Kingdom of Heaven, Prometheus, they all just, they're not bad. They're just so standard or
right.
mediocre.
I kind of get what you're saying. They're very stately
mm-hmm.
and kind of totemic, but they're not, they never really like go beyond like just like high classicism and in surface level stuff.
Yeah.
But I've heard, and I can't confirm because I've never seen it, but I've heard that the longer cut of Kingdom of Heaven. Like, is way better.
Yeah.
Even though it's, like, 5 hours or something ridiculous. It's already a long movie.
It is, yeah. Now, I've heard it's better, too. But, I mean, I don't know. He has a problem. Like, my biggest problem probably with Prometheus was, like, pacing. That was, like, really clunky and didn't give time or build any tension. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll
yeah.
just see how his next one. I never saw The Counselor, but I heard it was kind
oh,
of
the counselor.
A wonderful mess. But
I don't know. Richard likes that movie. He's a counselor apologist. Okay. That movie's a disaster, in my opinion. It's like, it's the most overwritten thing I've ever seen. Because Cormac McCarthy wrote it, yeah. but he wrote the screenplay. Like, there was never a book. But I don't know if he's ever written a screenplay before, so I think he was trying to write a novel in script form.
That makes sense.
And so everyone's just speaking in these, like, elaborate prose, and it just becomes mind-numbing about 30 minutes in. Again, it's gorgeous, but it's...
Yeah. Well, I almost heard... So I haven't seen it, but I've heard that it's kind of like Ridley Scott and McCarthy don't work well because you have this poetic prose.
Yeah.
That's like very abstract, and the character's not speaking like real people. Then you have a filmmaker who approaches it with like gritty realism,
mm-hmm.
and like, there's this like mixed match of performances.
That could have been it. I don't know. It's worth seeing because it's a strange failure.
Yeah.
In this, and it like some of those characters. Anyway,
I care about that probably for a whole podcast.
Yeah, that would get into it. You go back and listen to the review of that at some point. So, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia's Rob Mulaney will direct a Minecraft movie.
Mac's directing a movie.
Apparently. I know nothing about Minecraft. I know it's a huge deal.
It is.
And everyone, like... I mean, there's even a Minecraft joke in Trainwreck.
Yeah.
Which we'll talk about later. But, what's the deal?
So, basically, it's, So I have a roommate who is 30 and loves Minecraft, and then I've taught students like as young as like 8 who also love Minecraft. So everywhere in between. So no wonder they want to make it into a movie because
it's huge.
Huge. Wide audience. It's basically world building. So you're just like a character who builds like your own castle and like roads.
So it's kind of like SimCity?
Yeah. It's kind of like that.
There's
no real, like, competition. I mean, there's, like, sometimes there's creatures that come around that, like, destroy your buildings. You have to, like, kill them before they can get in.
Yeah.
But it's mostly, you get, like, people enjoy it because you get to build your own world.
Okay. I guess I get it.
So it's weird to me. But it's just because you don't, it's different from, like, other games where you're going towards, there's, like, some competition, or, like, a mission or a storyline. There's no really... any of that.
There's no, like, character or anything like that. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's the Warcraft movie that's coming out here pretty soon, which is directed by Duncan Jones, who did Moon and Source Code, which I like a lot. It's a movie project that we normally have, like, zero interest in if it weren't for the fact that it was being directed by Duncan Jones.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So it makes me slightly curious of what he's going to do with it, but... That's sort of in the realms of how, what do you do with this? Because that's like a sandbox game and a multiplayer world building kind of thing too. But Minecraft is even more kind of detached from because at least in like Warcraft, you can play as a character that you build yourself.
Yeah.
But in Minecraft, you're more kind of like bird's eye view, kind of like.
Like you're a person from what I've observed. You're a person, but there's no like. Special powers you have or a certain skill, it's just like it's your avatar.
And there's no like story like a traditional video game where you have to like go to the save points or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. All I know is that, like Minecraft as a thing has like arrived. And
like Minecraft books,
like novels,
for little kids.
Okay, so then there is some source material they could be drawing from as far as
written after the game. Oh, but for the movies, yeah.
Before a movie. I don't know. And the fact that Rob Mulaney is... Am I saying his name right? No. Rob... McCaney?
Yeah, maybe. It's
McCaney. Yeah. Mac.
Yeah.
from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I know that he was one of the co-creators of the show, one of the co-writers. And so it's not like he's just some actor who decided he's going to... make a big movie. He is something of a filmmaker. I don't know if he's up to this sort of challenge, but you know,
he's in Hollywood, I guess. I mean, has he made films outside of? Has he directed anything before?
Not that I know of. No. Okay. I mean, other than the pilot for It's Sunny that eventually got picked up by FX.
Okay.
That group worked on that together. I think he is of the three original or four original. cast members. He is the one that's a little bit more behind the camera than the others.
Okay.
I think I remember hearing that back in 2008 when I went to a It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia Comic-Con panel.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I don't know. I guess I have no reason to be excited about this, but the world is certainly going to be.
Yep, they will be.
Everything's an IP.
Everything, yeah.
Dixie Cup the motion picture is going to happen.
It will happen. When we're tired of superhero movies, Dixie Cup the movie will happen.
Dixie Cup the...
Yeah. Coke Zero, like you said, Coke Zero the movie. Dixie Cup the movie. I can see it now.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and get into the review of the week, which is Amy Schumer's and Judd Apatow's collaboration on Trainwreck.
I always, you know, it's, for me, I always forget that it's Judd Apatow. It feels so, I guess we can talk about that later, but it feels like a Amy Schumer project through and through.
Right, and there's been some people who've said that, that she's sort of more the creative force behind this, and Judd Apatow kind of likes to do this, where he goes and he finds people, and he sort of plucks them out of, well, I wouldn't say obscurity, obviously. Amy Schumer's been a very successful stand-up comic for a long time. She was on a few seasons of Last Comic Standing, where I think she was kind of mostly discovered, and then now she has her own show on Comedy Central, which is wildly successful. And there's been a lot of momentum for her in general.
Yeah.
It seems like in the last year or two.
Totally.
Since her show premiered. And so the fact that, you know, it kind of culminates with this movie where she's sort of, where she has written it for herself.
And it's like about, like it's, you know, in interviews, like a lot of the movie is taken from real experiences that she's had.
I've noticed actually when I was watching the movie that there were scenes that were from stand-up bits where she described them as accounts of her life.
Yeah.
As, you know, I went to this party or I went to this wedding shower and everyone was telling the worst thing they ever did. Like, that was a stand-up bit before it ended up being a scene in the movie.
That's one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Me too.
I died. That scene's
incredible. Even though I knew how it was going to go from the bit. Yeah.
Interesting. I didn't know that, but it makes sense.
So I wonder, and I'm not like the biggest Amy Schumer fan as a stand-up, so I don't know how much she drew from and how much is, or how much was, just from the screenplay aspect of it. But yeah, let's get into a little bit of the, what's going on here. Amy Schumer plays, what's her character's name? Amy.
Wow.
I wasn't sure. It's been a couple weeks. Amy Schumer plays Amy, who works in New York at a men's, kind of like a GQ magazine style thing. Kind of like the male, well, I was going to say the male version of Maxim, but Maxim sort of is the male version of Maxim.
Yeah. It's like Cosmo, male version of Cosmo.
Yeah, sure. Where basically her job is to pitch terrible, like, misogynist pieces for her editor, who's played wonderfully by Tilda Swinton, just knocking out of the ballpark every time she's on screen.
Every time she's on screen. In any movie, any role, she's fantastic.
And she eventually gets assigned to do this piece on sports, sports doctors in particular, who keep people on the courts and are able to play even when they have these extreme injuries. And she sort of ends up courting this doctor played by Bill Hader from SNL. And up to this point, she's been very, relaxed about the rules of relationships, and she hasn't really cared all that much about monogamy. And she does, you know, there's this whole thing at the beginning, this kind of prologue of her father, played by Colin Quinn of SNL, explaining why he cheats and why, you know, it's not a big deal, and, you know, sort of drilling it into their daughter's heads that monogamy is not realistic,
or even
attainable,
like a pursuit worth like fulfilling or even trying to get, you know.
And on top of it, she's just generally irresponsible, kind of a lush, and non-committal. But after kind of getting in this relationship with Bill Hader's character, he's rearing to go. He sees something in her that nobody else does.
Surprise, surprise.
And maybe things kind of turn a corner.
It sounds so original, doesn't it? I can't wait.
Well, we talked a little bit before the podcast started that... you know, you're a big fan of the show.
Yeah, I love the show. I think the show's hilarious and smart and is actually sometimes actually says things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's very feminist. It talks about feminism and race and gender in really smart ways.
Mm-hmm. And funny.
And funny ways, yeah.
Yeah, and oftentimes filthy.
Yes. Yes.
As Amy Schumer liked to do.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I guess the other thing she's really well known for outside of her show and outside of Last Comic Standing was doing the roasts.
Oh.
And she is kind of famously one of the most vicious roasters.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, because, you know, for her, so we have, there's a lot of male comedians who make sexist or misogynist jokes, like, about themselves being, mm-hmm. so, like, or making fun of other women kind of in sexist ways. But Amy Schumer, like, a lot of her jokes are pointed at the dumb man or the sexist man.
Yeah.
And making fun of, like, either beauty standards or making fun of how women are viewed in society by men.
Yeah, or the double standards.
The double standards.
Yeah, I think the first sketch I ever saw from the show, which might have been, like, from the first episode, was the one where her boyfriend has her play a military game.
Yes.
And his character is able to just, like, leave the first base and, like, go off and shoot or whatever. And she can't even get out of the first base because her character gets sexually assaulted. And then she has to spend the rest of the game filling out paperwork. So that kind of gives you an idea of sort of the sensibility of her
yeah,
show.
Yeah.
And it can be really kind of biting and funny. And I guess I'm guessing sort of by the little bit we've talked about this, that we're both a little surprised of how conventional
yeah.
the story ends up becoming.
Yeah.
Especially after establishing the character as this outrageous recluse or, well, not recluse, but rogue kind of.
Yeah. I mean, she's having sex with all these different people. She's always getting drunk.
Doesn't give an F.
Yeah, doesn't care. Somehow sells a job and is really rich.
Yeah, well, that's Hollywood.
Yeah, that's Hollywood. But yeah, and she's very selfish.
Mm-hmm.
Person.
But I've already sort of set you up as being the bleeding heart
yeah.
liberal, even though, I mean, I consider myself a bleeding heart liberal, but, you know, you're also the resident feminist of the group as well.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of people are talking about this movie as, like, kind of an extension of the whole Bridesmaids thing of, like, woo, movie for women! But do you think, like, the narrative basically says the way you were behaving was wrong,
yep.
and conventional American values, you know, settling down and, you know, becoming her sister, who's played by Brie Larson
yeah.
and Mike Birbiglia plays her kind of, you know, white bread, doughy, dorky husband.
Mm-hmm.
They're living the conventional life. And she's sort of like harping on her throughout the whole movie of you got to get together. And eventually she's sort of right. Like, her position is the one that's validated. So is that anti-feminist?
I don't know. Cause the title says it all. Cause it's about a woman who is like a train wreck. So it's about her like coming out of a train wreck, you know, her like becoming a better person. But I think, yeah, because I mean, the movie also has such a strange double standard, because at first it's like, oh yeah, look, here's a woman who has tons of sex, it enjoys sex a lot, mm-hmm. but then it's
kind of
time,
a player, like, basically yeah. if this was a male character, it would be that narrative,
right.
It's just reversed, the sex is reversed, but it's the idea of like the Matthew McConaughey style character who's sleeping with everybody until he meets the, you know, Jennifer Aniston type who yeah. warms his heart or whatever.
And but. So in one way, I think because, you know, there's usually a double standard with men and women. So like the man's a player, the woman is the slut, right?
Right.
And I think this demystifies that. Like, she's not a slut. She's never treated as one. She's just treated as an independent woman who's making this choice because
yeah.
she wants to. But at the same hand, it says the way to a better life is like
Bill Hader,
the way to a happy life is to settle down, like the American dream, white picket fence.
Yeah. And so do you think that the movie's trying to have its cake and eat it too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or do you think that it, that by even looking at it from that perspective, cause I've been struggling with this too. I haven't written my review yet, but I have to eventually kind of come to a consensus on this.
Yeah.
Are we thinking about it too much in those terms and by gendering it? And it's more just about a person who was making bad decisions, who's deciding to make good decisions, whatever those decisions may be, maybe has nothing to do with being a cool, independent woman has more to do with just not being careless with other people's feelings.
If we lived in a society that didn't slut-shame women, and if Amy Schumer wasn't known for doing feminist humor, I would say that would be a good way to approach the movie. But being that, like, Amy Schumer does feminist humor, and we do live in a society that still
slut shames
women who are who enjoy sex, you know, then I think we like the genders. It's important the gender is reversed, and we should look at it this way.
Yeah, and then on top of it, everybody wants to champion it as a feminist film,
right?
And so it makes you see it through that lens just because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the criticism is valid.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that too. I think by the last third of the movie, I was really surprised that that was the overall message that was taking place. I didn't expect it to end, you know, that the character would never change in some way or another, but I was surprised that it ended up being so traditional.
Yeah.
In a way. And it is at its heart, you know, it's super filthy. It's really funny. But at its heart, it is basically just a very traditional romantic comedy.
And that's what actually surprised me so much. Especially, so there's two storylines that are competing, I think, in Trainwreck. There's a storyline about Amy's character and her relationship with her sister and their relationship with their father.
Yeah.
And there's this tension between the three of them, the life choices they've made.
Who's the bigger success?
Who's the bigger success?
Yeah.
And I think that whole interaction, I loved all that stuff.
Yeah.
That was actually really interesting. And then there's this other storyline, though, with Bill Hader that is the most traditional romantic comedy you could get. Like, mm-hmm. It hits every note of a romantic comedy.
Yeah, totally.
And I was like, why didn't she just make a movie about her family?
That's interesting. I never thought about it in that sense.
Like, why does Bill Hader need to even...
Be there. I do like Bill Hader, though.
He's funny.
And he's really good in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, you know, very committed to the part, even though it could be seen as sort of a thankless, you know, he just plays the nice guy that you're rooting for.
Yeah.
He doesn't get to be as stand out of a character. He's sort of receded as an actor for Amy Schumer to take over the screen, which is fine. But he does that very gracefully, I think.
Yeah.
And he plays the Meg Ryan of the movie very well.
Yeah, that's so true. No, I guess I just was just surprised, especially.
But you're totally right. Those two plots are constantly competing in the movie.
Mm-hmm. And every time the plot with the sister and the father was going on, I was really engaged, and I felt like it was that felt more Judd Apatow to me. Like there's interesting dynamic. The relationships are difficult, and they feel more like real life.
Yeah.
And then there's like this fantasy, like romantic comedy fantasy that's also being played out.
Yeah. Which one did you say was more the Judd Apatow inspired?
I actually think the family one was.
Really? I would say the opposite.
Okay. Interesting.
Because I felt like a lot of my issues with the movie, whenever there were issues, I was reminded of other things that have happened in other Apatow films.
Yeah.
Mostly with the length. It's over 2 hours.
Is it? I don't think
I want to say it's like about 2 and 5, 2 and 10.
Yeah.
125 minutes.
Yeah.
And towards the last third, they start stacking conflict on top of conflict on top of conflict to the point where, you know, towards the end of a romantic comedy or whatever, you always have to have that moment where there's some big reveal that complicates things. And it's like, well, I never knew this about you.
Yeah.
And so they have to go away, and then there's a montage, and then they come back and they decide, well, I guess I can accept it. Well, that like ends up because it's like, it starts out as one thing, and then it transforms into another thing, and then it becomes another thing, and it's like this long, drawn-out moment of conflict, where it starts out where she's supposed to, like, go see Bill Hader at an award ceremony and has to take a call. He gets mad about that, and then he keeps her up all night to argue about it, but then later, that becomes the conflict, and it's just, it feels like that whole thing could have been like trimmed down to a 2-minute, 3-minute sequence.
Yes. And there's so much character transformation that has to like happen in that last third.
Yeah.
For the movie to have it. It really does. It wraps up everything. Everything is wrapped up so nicely. And there's like, it's a perfect Hollywood like happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
And just for me, the last like 25 minutes felt really clunky and sloppy and long because
yeah.
Had to wrap up all the characters' problems. And then also, yeah, and yeah, it also seemed like super extended because there's a weirdly amount of issues that happen because like the whole surgery,
one after another after another, yeah. And I was strongly reminded of Apatow's films when that sequence happened because the same thing happens in Knocked Up, the same thing happens in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and the same thing happens later in Funny People. Yeah. There's that long sequence in the house that feels like it swallows the movie. So I feel like, yeah, this is sort of Amy's movie.
Yeah.
But I feel like his directorial failings of just, like, letting the camera roll, letting people improv as much as they want to, and then being a way too kind of an editor and never trimming a scene. And because you, every once in a while in the movie, as funny as it is, they'll occasionally be those moments where they went off script and now they're just riffing.
Yeah.
And it should have cut way before that, and it just doesn't. And about every other scene just kind of goes about a minute or two too long.
Yeah.
We're
not doing spoilers, but there's just some ridiculous things that happen in the last, like, 25 minutes of the movie. I just lost it. For me, it, like, pushed all...
Right. Are you talking about her big declaration of love and the way she decides to do that?
There's that. There's a whole issue with her job. That happens and how that resolves.
The article that she's writing for Bill Hader. Yeah. And the way that, I mean, I think I read somewhere a kind of joke article. I think it was in EW that was like, how to explain Trainwreck to your parents if they tell you they want to see it. And it's like, it's basically like warn your parents that this is not the movie they think it's going to be. But there was one of them, one of the things she said is like, magazines don't run like this at all.
That's so true. I guess it's another, I mean, so we were talking a lot of, about all the problems in Trainwreck, but it's a really, like, it's a really funny movie.
Yeah.
I laughed like, constantly throughout the film. I just think it's really traditional and like cliche storyline wise, but Amy Schumer still shines. She's still hilarious. And then all the co-stars are hilarious as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that was like a lot of the Apatow movies. A lot of like the satellite characters end up like having these great moments. Of course, Tilda Swinton effortlessly just steals every scene she's in.
Of course.
And she plays this really kind of hard-nosed journalist, editor, and she plays it perfectly.
So good.
And there's been all these articles written about how like transformed she is and how she doesn't look like herself at all. It's like, I could tell that was Tilda Swinton.
Yeah, she just straightened her hair.
Yeah, she's wearing makeup. Ezra Miller has a tiny little part in this, and at first I was like, through most of the movie, is like, why are they wasting Ezra Miller? Because he just plays this goofy intern who never gets a talk. Yep. And then he gets to this scene towards the end where he gets to really go for it and be the Ezra Miller we know and love, I guess. And he's really good in the movie. Mike Birbiglia is really funny in the movie, playing the nice guy. I mean, even though thematically I think the movie kind of knocks the legs out from under the table, I think as a comedy it still pretty much works. It keeps you entertained.
And I say, I mean, since we're talking about this kind of like raunchy female comedy, I'd say the same thing for Bridesmaids. I think for me, Bridesmaids is a really funny movie, but it'd be so cliche, especially the last half of it.
Mm.
It just becomes another romantic comedy.
I agree. And I had a lot of the same, like, you know, because I came to Bridesmaids very late.
Okay.
Like, there was the hype train for it. Like, I wasn't that excited about it when I saw just the trailer because nobody knew it was going to be the movie it was going to be.
Yeah.
It looked like it's the female hangover or whatever the equivalent that was. And for whatever reason at the time, I was not excited about that idea.
Hangover's a masterpiece, Cassidy. Why would you not be excited about a female hangover?
But then everyone started talking about how great it was and people I respect and, you know, critics that I take their word for. talked about how great the movie was, and so I was finally like, all right, I guess I'll see Bridesmaids, and then I sort of have the same issues with it that I have with this one.
Totally.
I would say actually for me this is a little funnier.
Yeah, I think and because you're just funnier.
Because you're just dealing with one person's story, yeah. It feels a little more focused than mm-hmm. Bridesmaids.
I totally agree.
And actually, I would not be surprised. I don't know if I 100% think she deserves it, but I would not be surprised if Amy Schumer ended up getting an Oscar nomination for this.
Really?
Because it's been less uncommon for comedic parts now, especially women, with Melissa McCarthy getting a nomination for Bridesmaids and with Octavia Spencer getting a nomination for The Help.
I'm shaking my head.
Same year, right now. Actually. And so there's a few scenes in this where she really has to do some dramatic acting.
Yeah.
And does it surprisingly well.
Oh, yeah, she's very convincing. She's a really good actress.
Yeah. I don't think she ever would think of herself in that way. I think she's kind of a stand-up first and everything else second. But I was really kind of blown away with how ready she was to do that stuff.
Oh, yeah, there's some definitely, like, really emotional scenes and mm-hmm. arcs in the movie. Really dramatic arcs that call for really emotional scenes. And she shines, I think. She does a really good job handling both the really funny and the really serious.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, I mean, the movies, you do care about her.
Yeah, totally.
And her struggle to, like, just be happy, or, like, what will give her happiness in the end.
Yeah.
So.
I would say maybe, as sort of a end note on all of this, I would say maybe don't believe the hype totally, but I think that it's totally worth seeing.
Oh, especially
if you're already a fan of her.
Yeah.
If you're not, and have never been, I don't know if this will convert you.
Nope. I think it's very much, it's a lot of the same.
yeah, I definitely thought about that a lot of the time, too. It's like, oh, this movie hinges on how much you like Amy Schumer as a comedian.
Yeah. I mean, it's raunchy sex comedy.
Yeah.
A lot of it.
A lot
of it.
John Cena is in there, too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And actually, there's a lot of that stuff, don't want to get too far out, like we're just sort of wrapping up, but a lot of the stuff with John Cena in the beginning I felt kind of went a little long. Yeah. I felt it was a little front-loaded.
Yeah, I agree.
With character-building stuff there, but...
That was kind of a mess, yeah.
But yeah.
A quick question, I know you're wrapping up, but I have a question. What do you think about LeBron James?
Oh, yeah, I was going to bring him up, too.
It's like a...
Yeah, again, a lot of people were writing about that, and, you know, some people even said, like, if they're going to do another Space Jam, they should get LeBron James. Well, sure, why not? He's really kind of good in this, mm-hmm. actually. I thought he was going to be a stunt cast when I heard he was in the movie, and it was going to be like when P. Diddy was in Get Him to the Greek, or, you know, or like some of the actors who ended up in Funny People, these kind of like playing themselves right. thing. Kind of happens in Apatow movies a lot. But of all of those, I'd say this one is the most like fully integrated, and it didn't feel like a stunt and
makes sense of the story.
Yeah, makes sense with the story. It's not just like, oh, I happen to be friends with LeBron yeah. James.
You know, I think, I really think it was a stunt that just because LeBron James is actually talented, that it yeah. worked. Because I remember on ESPN, like watching ESPN, not me, my brother was watching ESPN. I don't like sports. He was watching it and I kept seeing all these ads for Trainwreck. And all they were, though, were like LeBron James advertisements. Like they weren't at all, like Amy Schumer was barely in them.
Right.
There's like, all it was. Look how like funny LeBron
James. Advertising.
Yeah. Because yeah. So trying to get more people, I think.
Whatever demographic will come. Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. It's almost like seeing the ads for American movies from other countries
yep.
and the different ways they'll
cater
sell
to their
movie.
Audience. Yeah.
Yeah. That's totally weird. But no, yeah, he ends up working pretty well in the movie, actually. Mm-hmm. I think everybody does for the most part. There was no like weak link here as far as actors go. It's just the movie itself was, I think, a little overlong and, like we said, surprisingly
traditional.
Conventional. Yeah. Yeah.
I think, and it's her first movie that she's ever written, mm-hmm. so maybe if she writes others, she'll stray from the path a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think maybe, I mean, I don't know if it's a career doctor kind of thing, but maybe if she were to do something where she was given more allowance to be conceptual, like her show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, because this is so based on her life and so based on her stand-up, and that kind of stuff, to maybe to do something from like take on something like a science fiction parody or like a horror movie parody or something like that, where she's working in something else, a different framework.
I would so see that. That sounds so cool. Amy Schumer, if you're listening, you should do what Cassidy Robinson said.
I'll produce your next movie.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get on to the final thing that we were going to do, which was our Netflix recommendations. They're not going to be full reviews, but you were telling me about something you saw recently.
Yeah.
And I'll let you explain this.
So I watched Xavier Dolan's Lawrence Anyways. So for those who don't know, Xavier Dolan is this young Canadian filmmaker who, I think he's 26 now, and he's made four films.
Mm-hmm.
Five films. They've all gone to Cannes. They've all been critically acclaimed. And they're all really interesting.
That's infuriating.
It's really depressing to me.
Whenever I find out about how, like, young, successful people, I just can't even.
Yeah, I would see his films at film festivals, and they'd be like, Xavier Dolan's not going to be here for Q&A because he's busy making another movie. I just automatically, I'm like, I hate him. I hate this movie already. I can't like this. And then by the end, I'm like, damn, this is so well done. Damn it.
So what is the movie?
So Lawrence Anyways, it follows the relationship between Lawrence and this woman named Fred, and on Lawrence's 35th birthday, he tells Fred that he is actually a woman. So he comes out to her as transgender. And the next 10 years follow his transition and their relationship. Because she just decides to try to stay with him.
Oh, okay.
Through all of it.
Sure.
Of course, I mean, and they've been together for a long time before he told her. And it's about like this, it is everything, it's equally about both of them. So it's about Fred as a woman, what she wants for her life, the struggles that she has by staying with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also about Lawrence coming to terms with herself and being comfortable as a woman and living as a trans woman in society.
Sure.
And it's Xavier Dolan, he has like lots of experimental flourishes. So it's just a kind of traditional narrative, but the style ranges from like gritty, handheld, intimate scenes to like these kind of symbolic sequences of like clothes falling from the air, or like
more kind of poetic filmmaking.
Poetic right, filmmaking that's representative of like what the characters are feeling,
yeah.
And so it can, and then everything in between. And it's a really powerful, really authentic, thought-provoking movie. I thought it was really moving. And
yeah.
Oh, I was so jealous because it's so well done. And like, it's just a gorgeous. I would take stills from that movie and hang them around my house because
sure.
it's a gorgeously filmed film and great acting. Couldn't recommend it more.
Is it American?
No. It's so it's in French, but he's a Canadian-based filmmaker.
Oh, so for like French-Canadian?
Yeah.
Okay.
French-Canadian.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. And it's also like, it's a story like, the way you're describing it is, you know, a lot of people don't really, it's interesting that that story hasn't been told yet, or at least in that way, because it seems like that is very common to the trans experience,
yeah.
Is, you come out to your significant other and they sort of have to go along with the journey with you if they don't bail.
Yep.
And I've heard so many stories of like that in real life that it's kind of incredible that you never see that in movies. It's always like the prostitute or whatever.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, in like in lesbian and gay films, they have like the like wife or husband has to leave or they get divorced.
Right.
But Lawrence Anyways is about that struggle to stay together,
mm-hmm.
and how like society's prejudices and then your own baggage that you bring
to the whole thing
yeah. can cause it to implode. And it's a struggle about people who love each other but actually don't have a chance because there's too many things going against
just,
them.
Yeah, too complicated.
Yeah.
That's interesting, yeah. Well, you've sold it.
Okay.
I want to see it.
Cool. Yes, watch it. It's very much worth it.
The movie I'm going to recommend is a documentary called The Punk Singer. I think I've talked about it a little bit in passing before, but it is a documentary that follows the life and career of punk rocker Kathleen Hanna from the band Bikini Kill.
Okay.
And later she was in the band La Tigra, and she was sort of one of the original pioneers of the Riot Girl movement in the early 90s. I think she started in Olympia, Washington, when the Riot Girl thing happened there with Bikini Kill and Bratmobile and all of L7 and those bands, and then later moved to D.C. and sort of started a chapter of it there and got, you know, basically found, you know, punk rock at that time in the early 90s was this very male dominated scene, and it was specifically sure. coming out of hardcore. It was really aggressively male. and you know, there was a lot of politics that were being discussed during that time, but women kind of felt excluded from it all. It was like this big boys club. So Riot Girl was in a sense this reaction to that, and all of the women that were sort of in the periphery of the punk scene found their home in Riot Girl. And started this kind of scene within the scene or just outside of it. And Kathleen Hanna in particular was really aggressive about talking about third wave feminist topics about like sexual abuse and that kind of stuff. And she would do these very in your face performance things. There's always kind of a performance art aspect to it as well, where she would write like slut on her stomach. And
I think I've seen pictures of that.
I bet you have in books or something. Yeah. There were a lot of like filmmakers that were involved in Riot Girl, a lot of like magazines and zine writers and that kind of stuff, poetry and blah, blah, blah. So it became like this art collective.
That sounds amazing. I should watch this.
You should totally watch it.
This sounds like right up my alley. Punk's never really quite been my thing, but this sounds.
Yeah, it's incredible. And she lived this incredible life. And, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but she actually was the person, she was friends with Kurt Cobain because they were both living in Olympia, Washington in the late 80s. And she was the one who came up with the title Smells Like Teen Spirit. She said as a joke, like, you smell like Teen Spirit, but the brand of deodorant at the time.
Yeah.
and that's how that he ended up writing that song.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I mean, if you're interested in the early 90s punk scene, there's a lot of information about that. And then if you're interested in feminism, there's a lot of information about that. And also just her life in general and sort of why at the height of her indie rock career, like the early 2000s with La Tigra, which was actually kind of becoming nationally recognized, she dropped out of the scene completely. Because of this strange diagnosis and illness that she ended up getting. A lot of people don't know this, but she's married to one of the Beastie Boys. So it's an incredible documentary, and it talks about a lot of things, and it's does it better than I've seen in most music-related documentaries, especially when they're trying to sort of recreate these histories. It doesn't seem like they're romanticizing it as much as some do.
Right, they point out. Well, I think it's all about like pointing out. Sounds like it's about pointing out flaws too, and how people were like fighting against.
Yeah, but flaws. Yeah, sort of trying to build their own space within this culture. It's totally cool. Well, thank you, Andy.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
And I have to read a bunch of like garbage here, but if there's anything you want to promote, if you have a Twitter, if you have an Instagram. If you have a Tumblr, now's the time.
All right.
Any of those things?
I have a Twitter.
Okay.
This is Andy Motz, MOTZ. Follow me. So I post about feminism and film. So
and probably eventually at some point your film.
In my film, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you going to start a Kickstarter?
I'll do something. I'm not
Indiegogo?
Sure.
Indiegogo?
Yeah, maybe some online promotion. Either way, we'll figure it out.
People keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
And if they do end up following you on Twitter, then they might be able to see those kind of things and be able to fund you if they so choose.
Yes. No pressure.
I'm excited. I can't wait to see your next movie.
I can't wait to make it.
I would contribute to your Kickstarter. Probably not very much, though, because I don't have a lot of money.
Every little bit counts.
Sure. If anybody has anything they want to say about this episode, though, your opinions on Trainwreck or either of the movies we recommended here in our Netflix homework or anything from a past episode, go ahead and contact us at our email at jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook where we post news updates and any updates about the show. I will probably have to post something in the midweek about how there's not going to be an episode next week. That is where you would find out is at our Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can also find us on Twitter at jabberpodcast, all one word. We are on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you're there, please leave us a star rating and a one sentence review. We are also searchable under the Zune and Windows Podcast Network, as well as Pocket Cast. You can read my weekly movie reviews that I do every week for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. That's where I archive everything. You can also read some of the reviews I've done at the Seattle-based website, The MacGuffin, at mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. At some point, they'll post that review I did for the documentary Do I Sound Gay? You can follow Richard at his blog at rdwally.weebly.com. Be sure to listen to Brad, Amanda, and Alyssa's podcast, Quarter Life Crisis, at quartercrisis.podbean.com, as well as our friend from Olympia, Washington, Leland, at his podcast, dampercast.com. And be sure to check out Patrick and his dad over in Detroit at Make Dad Read Comics. Until then, we will talk to you next time, whenever that is, next week or the week after.
Awesome.
Thanks again, Andy.
Yeah, thank you.